I'm Mike Sainsbury, and welcome to this ASI cast. When news aggregators publish stories, how concerned should the original publishers be that credit is being given to where the content has come from? Brand attribution for stories published on Facebook and social media more generally was the subject of a major study conducted by the BBC World Service, and in this ASI cast, our research director, Richard Marks, talks to Shantanu Chakrabarty, the service's head of audience insight. How worried should news brands be about the issue?
Welcome to the podcast, Shantanu. The BBC is one of the world's biggest media brands and well known to our listeners, but how it's organised and especially how it distributes news and content internationally does change over time. So I think it might be worth starting with just a quick update on what the remits of BBC News and the World Service are and what your role is in coordinating research for them.
Thanks, Richard, for having me on the podcast. So very quickly, broadly speaking, BBC News internationally in terms of its news operations can be divided into two big halves. One is the commercially funded part of it, which is Global News, that operates English language TV and English language digital news services all around the world. And the other half is the World Service, which is funded partly through a grant and aid from the government and partly through the license fee. And that operates in 42 languages, including English. And that's audio, that's TV, that's digital, all around the world. So broadly, these are the two functions. My role is head of audience insight for the World Service. Me and my team, we look at measurement, we look at understanding audience behavior, we look at understanding sociocultural context, and of course, we look at informing our EXCO, the World Service Group, the BBC News International News Operations Executive Committee, in terms of their strategic thinking around audiences.
Now, your paper in Lisbon is going to be looking at the challenges that news brands like the BBC face on Facebook and social media more generally, and specifically the whole issue of brand attribution, by which I mean awareness of where the content is coming from and credit being given for that content, which is obviously a big issue for the BBC given the way in which it's funded and the way it needs to prove and justify why it's broadcasting to the world. Firstly, how did you go about researching such a wide topic as that?
Well, just to pick up your question a little earlier than where you ended, yes, it's a big issue, but in terms of the justification of why we do what we do, attribution isn't necessarily that important. If you just step back and think about it, the mission is to have good quality, high quality, BBC quality information in places where it doesn't exist. So in some ways, we do fulfill our mission by making sure that the information reaches consumers where it doesn't exist, right? Now, of course, we are interested in attribution and critically interested. What I'm trying to say is that the mission isn't compromised by lack of attribution, right?
You could still achieve the mission. You just wouldn't know you were achieving
that's
the mission.
Or people wouldn't know that we were the ones, helping them lead their lives in more informed ways, right? So, I mean, that's a partly, it becomes quasi-philosophical. But to come to the, to the heart of the matter, yes, we are critically interested in attribution, not just in terms of digital platforms. Yes, digital platforms, of course, but because there's quite a chunk of the World Service's, content that's carried on third-party TV and radio partners. So this project was looking at attribution in the round on third-party platforms, whether that be TV, radio, digital. But a significant chunk of it, the quantitative part of it, which was in 8 markets, specifically looked at the question of attribution on Facebook. And that was a real eye-opener for us. And the way we did it was by actually mocking up a Facebook homepage and serving up to people, in experimental conditions. But for all practical purposes, there was not that much of a difference between, the mocked up version and actual Facebook. So the results were quite intriguing, to say the least.
Ah, so this wasn't claimed recall or general questions. This was actually observing people, what they did, and then...
And both. So, again, if you think about it, right, because you're studying attribution, it's such a circular, you know, it's a vicious cycle. So how are you going to study attribution, which is about whether people recall or not, when you know that people don't recall things that they've seen on, right, on the platform? So naturally, it had to be something that was at least quasi-observational. So the idea was that we mock up a Facebook page, and we worked with our partners, you know, Tapestry for the for the quantitative part, and Flamingo for the, there was a qualitative part that, you know, set it all up. And we mocked up a Facebook page which looked to all intents and purposes like the Facebook page of an, you know, of an average person. And within that, there were also points where people could click through, right? So the idea was they play around on that page. We didn't really observe them as they were doing it, because it was all done online for the most part. But they could click on particular things. We could see where people were clicking, and immediately after they had explored the page is when we would ask them, you know, questions about it. So the questions were asked very close to the point of their actual exposure to the page, which therefore meant that recall would be slightly better. So when I do talk about, you know, at the conference about the data and about the numbers that you see, it's safe to assume that those numbers are slightly higher, if anything, than you would in the real life situation, because here we are asking people questions about them very close to the exposure and in an experimental situation.
And the good thing about the methodology is that you weren't relying on their claimed exposure. You actually knew from having set up what they had seen, so you were able to compare that with their recollection and see.
That's right. And again, it was, at the end of the day, you can't give people, you know, unlike Facebook, so of course, I mean, with any methodology, you've got limitations. The limitation of this one in some ways was that you could only give them a certain length of a mocked up page, right? It's not an infinite scroll like Facebook behavior is. So to that extent, there is, you know, it's as I said, the numbers that you see, let's say if you see that there's, say, for example, 25% attribution in a market through this test, in real life, it might be much lower because you're giving people a limited, you know, portion of the Facebook experience, and you're asking people questions closer to it. So what that means in real life is that the numbers could be quite shockingly lower than that you see on this one. And I mean, it's not a surprise to say, is it, that the numbers are pretty shockingly low in the test version anyway.
Yes. So what you're saying is the figures are low, but in reality, they could be even lower.
They could be even
lower. This is a best case scenario. It's interesting what you're saying about the infinite scroll, because I was reading last week that I think Congress in the States is exploring legislation that actually would stop the infinite scroll, because the psychological test done to prove it's too addictive, that you need to at some point have a button saying go to page two, otherwise people just stare at it.
Well, we get into very tricky areas, right? Especially when you use the term, you know, addiction. We get into tricky areas of irregulation. We get into tricky areas of, you know, human agency versus are we all at the, you know, etc., etc. So I'm not sure it's so much the infinite scroll that's the issue, versus what the reward system that Facebook builds into its operations. And by the reward system, I mean, you know, the little hit of dopamine, I don't know, if you get when you click on something and get a like. It's the reward system, I think, that's the issue, rather than the infinite scroll. But again,
Instagram have brought in a test where they're reducing the ability to like items, because it's just as a test to see whether it has an impact, because there's this concern about social hierarchies in school where kids just collect likes to share.
I'm sure our colleagues in Facebook have very good intentions, but there is, and this is outside the scope of this presentation, but these are questions about what business models are built on, aren't they? And
exactly. In terms of your paper in Lisbon, obviously I don't want to preempt the whole paper, but it'd be interesting to perhaps give listeners, particularly listeners who may not be in Lisbon, some feel for it. I suppose the way into it would be, on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried should news brands be about losing their own identity on Facebook? In your opinion, I won't hold you to it. I'm sure you didn't use that as a question. Just your conclusion, how worried should news brands be?
In some ways, the bigger a news brand you already are in your respective market, the less concern you have for worry, but you still have huge concerns for worry. Because forget research, forget, you know, complicated methodologies with mocked up Facebook, etc., etc. Anecdotally, you know, has anyone in your life ever said, oh, I saw that news item on The Guardian on Facebook? No, everyone says I saw it on Facebook. In fact, that's where we started this project, right? Everyone saying I saw it on Facebook, but you look at your analytics and, you know, Facebook numbers, you know, or YouTube numbers for consumption of your content are going through the roof. Right? So that's where we started. And the point is that, you know, because we started with really in-depth qual, autoethnographic diary type methods, and then there were depth interviews, and then we went into the quant, we believe we've got a really good idea of what are the various factors at play. And just like any other sociological phenomenon, as this is, it is, you know, multifactorial. And one of the big factors is how big you already are in your market. It improves your attribution. So very, 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 I don't remember the exact numbers at the top of my head, but in the UK, where BBC is a very strong presence, you can get attribution up to 50%, more than 50% plus. But if you flip it around on its head and you think about it, it's the BBC in the UK. And that's at 50% in a best case scenario, which means if you're a new player in a market with very little brand awareness, not known for, you know, what you do, chances are you're not going to get any attribution at all. In other words, people are going to consume, and people are going to consume stuff and say, oh, thank you, Facebook, not thank you, publisher. Now, whether you care about the thanks if you're making money, that's a different matter altogether.
You mentioned, obviously, it varying across geographies, and that correlates with the strength of the brand. I guess the other area potentially it varies is across demographics in terms of age, because awareness of the BBC, for example, presumably will be higher amongst people who grew up with it in a pre-digital era than those who've grown up in the confusing world of online.
Possibly, but you know, we didn't find uniformly across the countries, right? And the quantitative was in 8 countries, I think. There wasn't huge variations by demographics, but the bigger, you know, explanation of why this varies is what type of news consumer you are, and we, you know, everyone segments. You know, all news organizations, I'm sure, segment their consumers in various ways. We at the World Service segment our consumers in terms of behavior. How, you know, how much news do you consume? How many times do you consume? And how many platforms you consume on? And those really most engaged, heavy-duty consumers, you're consuming news on multiple platforms, multiple times a day, and spending a lot of time on it. We call them news connoisseurs. And what you tend to see is that attribution is higher for those news connoisseurs as opposed to news nibblers, and from the name you can get a sense of who they are. That doesn't mean they're not interested in news, it's just that they're nibbling at it, you know, so multiple times a day. And if you're a news nibbler, you don't have high attribution. How would you? Because you're not spending too much time when you're nibbling, right? So that's the thing that's driving more of this from the individual psychology level, rather than whether they're young or old, and whether they're male or female. Now, it happens that you would find more news connoisseurs in older age groups, but we don't think that's purely a function of age.
No. Interesting. So is it also about their engagement with the whole process of news and where it comes
possibly
from?
And there are, I mean, again, you know, hopefully we'll talk more about this, you know, in the presentation itself. And there are other factors going on. How you search for news, what kind of a culture are you in? You know, Germany has historically been a high trust in news culture, and those numbers haven't dropped like they have in other parts of the world. And in Germany, you see, surprisingly, paradoxically, people are not very switched on thinking about who their content is coming from, because they're generally speaking, they trust the news. Whereas when you find in a market the trust diminishes, that's when people start to think about, oh, where is this coming from? And then attribution. So, you know, my advice to publishers, go operate in markets that have no trust at all. No, I just kid. I'm joking.
Well, just finally, on that point, I mean, in terms of advice to publishers, and I guess it is just advice, but where do we go from here in terms of should a news brand embrace Facebook despite that issue, given its size, or should they try and minimise the use of the platform? What steps perhaps could they take, do you think? I mean, we'll put it another way, but what's the BBC taking from this investigation?
What the BBC has taken from this is, you know, being much more conscious about what the trade-offs are of being on Facebook. It's inarguable that you get an incredible amount of reach, right? You get it as the BBC, you can get it as, you know, some other entity entirely. So it's not as easy to say, let's just, you know, not be on Facebook. But the question is about, you know, whether people are recognizing, especially if you're saying Facebook is a medium for me to reach out to people I don't normally reach. And again, I think that claim is, you know, it's an overclaim. Because often, how do people find you on Facebook? Often they find you on Facebook because they know you from somewhere else. Mm. But that aside, the question is not whether we should be on Facebook or not. The question is about, are we consciously making the trade-offs that being on Facebook, you know, allows us to make? Now, in some ways, not our, you know, as I said, not our commercially funded part of the operations, but for the world service, a revenue generation is not the, you know, main objective of being on Facebook. But for publishers, you know, most publishers who are not in the position that we are, there is a question of getting, you know, some revenues out of Facebook. But if you're seeing that there are no revenues, all you're getting is reach, it's worthwhile to think of that reach as possibly empty calories.
Mm.
I mean, calories, but fairly empty. It's up to each publisher to decide whether they want to be in that game.
Excellent. Well, thanks for making time to talk to us and preview your paper in Lisbon. Look forward to hearing it and seeing you there. So thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Richard, for having me.